The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Tuesday, June 1st, 2021. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me, and at least once a week for the next 2 months in advance of the 2021 NBA draft that is scheduled for July 29th, we're going to be dedicating an episode of the Eye on College Basketball Podcast to a notable prospect, same way we did in advance of last year's NBA draft. We started the series last week with a 22-minute profile of Cade Cunningham. If you missed it and you're interested, go find it. Today, we will turn our attention to another prospect who seems like a lock to go in the top five of the 2021 NBA draft. His name is Evan Mobley. He's a 7-foot center who averaged 16.4 points, 8.7 rebounds, 2.9 blocks, and 2.4 assists in 33.9 minutes per game in his one season at USC. Shot 57.8% from the field. He was the Pac-12 Player of the Year, Pac-12 Freshman of the Year, and Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year. He was a consensus second-team All-American who led USC to the Elite Eight of the NCAA tournament. Most mock drafts have him going second or third in this 2021 NBA draft. So let's start with this, Deadleg. Is Evan Mobley to you clearly, unquestionably, the best big in this draft?
Yes, I think that is unquestionable. We agree? I mean, yes. At this point. How about this for a quick comp, okay? Compare him to a recent big, one he played against and was good against in James Wiseman. To me, Mobley's a more versatile player with a higher upside. And a year ago, in a weaker draft class, what's interesting is Wiseman went second. Mobley might wind up going second or third. We mentioned in the previous pod, at least I did. I don't think Mobley's going to go first in this draft because of centers and how they're viewed and how their role is changing by the year. But it is interesting. Like, if you put Mobley and Wiseman, even knowing what Wiseman's out, like, a year ago I would have said the same thing, I think. I would still take Mobley over Wiseman coming out of college, and we agree on that. So if we agree there, yes, Mobley's got to be the best big available in this draft.
I'm with you. Wiseman went number two in last year's draft of the Golden State Warriors, and I think Mobley is a better prospect than him. If you took them, and forget, if there was a way to erase James Wiseman's rookie season, the injury, Draymond cussing him out every other possession, if you didn't know anything other than what you saw from Wiseman as an amateur, and you put Wiseman and Mobley in the same draft, in this draft, I would still take Evan Mobley over James Wiseman, just because I think Mobley checks most of the boxes for a modern-day big. Great defender, as a rim protector, but also when it comes to guarding in space. He's got incredible instincts. Just seems to know where to be and what to do basically at all times. That's on the defensive end of the court. On the offensive end of the court, you know, he can put it on the floor. He can play make off the bounce. He's a better-than-most-realized passer. Evidence being, you know, he did average 2.4 assists per game. That's not nothing. He made 12 three-pointers. So he didn't shoot a lot and didn't shoot a great percentage from the three-point line, but he's capable. He shot 46.3% on two-point jumpers, 69.4% from the free throw line. So those numbers suggest he can, with time, be a stretch the floor big. So I'm with you on how centers have been devalued. And it's probably why you don't take a center number one. But at some point, you just take best prospect available. And if it happens to be a center, you would like it to be a center who is built for the modern NBA on both ends of the court. And I think Evan Mobley, not perfect, but he is built for the modern NBA on both ends of the court.
He is a prospect whose skills seem fairly obvious even to the layman. I remember watching him at Mohegan Sun in Bubbleville late November at the start of last season when USC flew to Connecticut to play in that event. And I tweeted something along the line. It was within like the first like 15 minutes of the first half. I was like, I've seen enough. Mobley's got no business dropping out of the top three of the 2021 NBA draft. I still maintain that. I mean, at 7 feet, he's got a 7'4", 7'5 wingspan. I think he switches ball screens pretty damn well for his size. He can also defend the perimeter extremely competently, in addition to just being a really good shot blocker, both on ball, weak side, all of that. He is a very good modern defender, even given his body type. He's a little lithe, GP, but he'll put on pounds. I just don't see. He is a prospect where maybe he's not, you know, an absolute slam dunk, excuse the pun, you know, 3, 5, 7 years in. I don't know, but I am not seeing with him real bust potential. He is too good defensively. He's not going to shrink. Shot blockers don't lose that ability. If they're good at the college level, that almost always translates there, and he was wonderful at that. Second most in the country last season, only Namish Keita out of Utah State, who had two more than Mobley, had more shots swatted, and obviously our bizarre college hoops pandemic-afflicted season. So, yeah, I like him a lot. Now, the question is he actually, like, he is a center, but is he going to be a center? Like, I think he is this 4-5 fusion because he can step out and shoot mid to deep. He shot 40 trays last season, 12 of 40. That's, to me, that's fine at this level. In fact, Enfield had like, you know, 7 transfers on that USC team that took between 40 and 173. So he got enough looks. He wasn't going to be asked to shoot 4 triples a game, and I don't think he will be at the NBA level either. But I actually think that he'll wind up going 2nd or 3rd in this draft because the team that ultimately selects him will not utilize him the way that Golden State is at least initially trying to utilize James Wiseman. Evan Mobley, because he can switch screens and defend the perimeter, step out, has a reliable, good form on his shot. You see this, and I push back against it a little bit, but you see like some, like if he hits the ceiling, it's Anthony Davis, because Anthony Davis, similar size, especially coming out of college. Remember what Anthony Davis's body type was when he left Kentucky there. He was the National Player of the Year. Mobley was not. Davis was the clear-cut number one pick in that draft. Mobley is not in this draft. But the idea is that if Mobley can continue to grow a shot, put on a few more pounds, he can be the kind of two-way 4-5 that Davis has become, injuries withstanding. You agree with that general assessment?
Yeah, I mean, I don't put a ceiling on a prospect like this. Again, he checks a lot of boxes. You know, you mentioned his ability to guard in space, which is so important at the NBA level. Now, I've been watching a lot of the NBA playoffs. You know, it's Tuesday morning right now, so on Monday night, the late game was Memphis-Utah. And the Grizzlies once again competed, but came up a little short. Jonas Valanciunas is the starting center for the Grizzlies. And he has had a tremendous season. He is arguably, I know John Morant's been getting all of the attention, and deservedly so. He's a future star, if not a current star. But in the regular season, you could reasonably argue that Jonas Valanciunas was the Grizzlies' most valuable player. Now, most people outside of Memphis don't watch the Grizzlies because they're not on TNT or ESPN very often. But if you watched him in the regular season, you could come away going, Jonas Valanciunas might be their MVP. Fast forward to the playoffs, where everything is matchup driven, and Utah is just putting him in ball screens every possession, and he cannot guard in space. He has to drop, and it's a nightmare. Like, you need him on the court because of what he brings to the offensive end and his ability to rebound, and he's like really, really, really good, but he can't do that one thing well, and it is getting exposed over and over and over again. Like on Wednesday night, because that's probably the last game in this Utah-Memphis series, watch the game and just watch what Utah does every time they're in a half-court set. They put Jonas Valanciunas in a ball screen, and it's a nightmare for the Grizzlies. I say all that to say, with Evan Mobley, you can't put him in a ball screen, or at least you can't put him in a ball screen every possession and expose him, because he's switchable, because he can guard in space. He can guard smaller people on the perimeter, and that is a huge asset because – when it comes to the playoffs in the NBA, this has been true for several years now. If you can't guard in space, there is a decent chance you get played off the court. Evan Mobley is not the type of center prospect who I think is ever going to get played off the court.
Yep, I agree with that. He can also handle well. You mentioned his assist numbers. I think he's got really good touch with his passing. He can pass out of the post well. Even bringing the ball up the floor, he's good at creating his own shot. I remember talking to Enfield in the middle of the season. I went and pulled back one of the quotes he gave me. And he actually wound up saying he's more like Anthony Davis was in college than you get. Again, these are not direct comparisons, but he said he's more like Anthony Davis was in college than Kevin Durant. Now, the Durant stuff comes up because he's long, he's lanky, he's got good form on his shot. And although Durant was an insanely good shooter from deep, Mobley is not that. Defensively and the rebounding numbers, there were some similarities with Durant. But the point that Enfield was making was Durant had many more guard skills. He said he scored 25 a game in college because he could clear out the lane and just get it done. Clear out and do your thing. Evan's different than that. He is more built like Anthony was. And I think that is absolutely true. Defensively, he's not going to get played off the court. I also give credence to what he was able to do at USC. You know, it was the first time in like 3.5 decades USC swept the Arizona schools on the road. They had their best finish in league play in 3 decades, you know, one of their deepest NCAA tournament runs ever, and Mobley was a huge part of that. So I do think that his impact on that program and given their success also will have at least an influence on where he ultimately ends up going. I think there's a potential here that he drops out of the top three just because he's a big and you've got these other guards that are in the conversation there. And we can get into that just as we move along with these draft profiles and we get to those other prospects. But for me, I'm not fully on this trend that just because you happen to be 6'10 or 6'11, that doesn't mean you're necessarily unworthy of being picked first or second. And hell, for all we know, and I'm not predicting this will happen, GP, but if you told me that Mobley stepped in, immediate impact player, all-star by year number two, and then 4 years from now, we happen to have another player come up in the grassroots circuit that was of a similar mold, similar build. Like, why the hell not? Why can't you take a player like that first overall? You want to take the best available talent. And yes, what kind of player is going to fit with your overall scheme and your roster there? I think Mobley has the potential, again, the potential to be good enough on both sides of the floor, particularly if he puts on a little more weight and can prove to be a reliable shooter. If he is going to be that good, I think maybe his performance and how he bears out might have a little bit of influence on this idea where it's like, okay, for the next decade, no matter what, if you have the number one overall pick, there's no way you're taking anyone that's over, you know, 6'9", 6'10", because that's just not how the league is built. I think that's a little bit narrow-minded. And again, as we see, GP, every 3 to 5 years, the league continues to evolve in terms of what priorities are put on what players with what skill sets.
Well, I don't know that I would label anybody strictly by their height, because a 6'11 wing is going to be different than a 6'11 center, but I get your point. I went and looked this up this morning. I'm with you that I don't believe it's a non-starter. Like, you can't take a center number one the way a lot of people say you can't take a running back number one or even in the first round now. You know, if Anthony Davis is available at number one, you take him number one. And clearly that was the right choice when New Orleans did that back in 2012. But I will say there's only been 6 centers taken number one overall since 2004. And only 2 of them you can reasonably say were the right picks. It's Anthony Davis in 2012, and then in 2004, Dwight Howard. Those were the right picks. They're centers taken first, and you got it right. But in 2005, the number one pick, Andrew Bogut. Should have took Chris Paul. In 2015, this one's debatable. Karl Anthony Towns went number one. Who would you rather have right now, Karl Anthony Towns or Devin Booker? I think I'd rather have Devin Booker.
Probably. Let me, off the top of my head, Booker goes 7. Where'd he go?
Devin Booker actually went 13th in that draft behind such prospects as Jahlil Okafor, Emmanuel Mudiay, Frank Kaminsky, Justice Winslow, and Trey Lyles, his teammate.
Trey Lyles. I disagree with that at the time. There's Lyles one I never saw there. But a couple of...
No, I'm not trying to you know, rewrite history and say, I knew Devin Booker should have been number one in front of Karl Anthony Towns. I didn't. I would have got it wrong as well. I'm just saying they got it wrong, or at least arguably got it wrong. I think I would rather have Devin Booker from the 2015 draft right now than Karl Anthony Towns. And then in 2018, DeAndre Ayton goes number one.
Right.
Should have took Luka.
Should have. Now, Ayton is coming into his own.
He's very good. He's not Luka, though.
He's not Luka. He's not Luka, for sure.
Very good. He's
but
very good.
But so, yeah, and so there's a, I think there's a distinction to be made here. Your point is that since 04, there's only been two instances in an NBA draft where the center was both taken with the first pick and the center that was taken should have been the number one pick taken. There's a couple of other instances, obviously, where the center was taken first, wasn't the best player in the draft, but was also not this epic mistake, like Ayton, for an example, coincidentally enough, playing alongside Booker as they're going against the Lakers right now. But that
I left one out, by the way. 2007, Greg Oden went number one. Should have probably taken Kevin Durant.
Who it was the perfect example of what you're talking about in terms of height. Durant, 6'10", 6'11", you know, and just clearly just a killer wing. You know, maybe when it's all said and done, maybe a top 10 all-time player in NBA history. Oden, what can you do? But yes, that is one of the more infamous misfires at number one.
So that's why I probably like look elsewhere at the top of a draft than the center position, because the way the NBA is played right now, the center position is never been has never been valued less than it is. And, you know, history is not on your side. So I think actually the debate isn't, you know, should you take Evan Mobley or Cade Cunningham number one? I think most people agree you should take Cade Cunningham number one. It's like, okay, now what? Do you go Jalen Suggs or Evan Mobley? Do you go Jalen Green or Evan Mobley? Do you go Jonathan Kuminga or Evan Mobley? Not necessarily, because it's clear to me those players are better prospects. I don't know that they are, but none of those other players, nobody else in play for the top three or four or five is a center and only a center. Mobley is the only one that checks that box, and that's something front offices are going to have to figure out. Like, do we want to spend a top two pick or top three pick on a center, or do we grab a similarly gifted prospect who happens to play a more valuable position? A
couple lingering thoughts here to close. One, so Mobley's a very good, well-rounded player on both sides of the ball, both sides of the court. But I wonder if because he's a bit more of a passer than he is a shooter. Like, he's not a shoot-first stretch big. He can shoot. He's just not a shoot-first guy at this point. And that's served him well. He's been a very good player with the approach that he's had. And Enfield actually emphasized to me on a couple of occasions how mature he was in the recruiting process and how he was that guy once he got to campus. He couldn't overstate that more. And I actually think that's a very important part of all this stuff. He wasn't – because Mobley has been – highly touted, highly ranked for years now, and while it's often no fault of the players, you'll get a top five prospect get to campus, and the coach knows, you know, on a certain level, be it the player or his parents or you coach or whatever, like, you'll just deal with headaches. That was apparently not the case from what I was told with Evan whatsoever there. But the point I'm taking way too long to make is, because he's more of a passer than a shoot-first stretch big, and because if you had to tilt one way or the other, better on defense, better on offense. He's a better defender than he is an offensive player at this point. You know, quality rim runner. Are those things going to be what causes him, instead of going 1-2 or 2-3 or even 3-4, because we've seen what Suggs is capable of. Jalen Green is obviously getting plenty of strong consideration in that top three right now. I just wonder if, because he's not yet there offensively as a – he's not Durant coming out. He's not close. I wonder if that – what might – that does that make him drop? And then my last thought is the name that I actually think kind of makes sense for him ultimately, that I think he might compare well to if he hits this. I got to be honest. I see more like Chris Bosh than I do Anthony Davis or obviously KD. If you give me Chris Bosh, if you tell me Evan Mobley Parrish is as good as Chris Bosh, I mean, you've won the draft with your pick because you've selected a Hall of Fame player. He's got to get to that point. Don't know if he will, but I actually like him the most in terms of a comp there. I could see him growing into that level kind of player that Bosh was for a better part of a decade.
One last thing, and then we'll get out of here. To your point about the character of Evan Mobley, I'm not going to pretend to know him. I've met him. I don't know him. But I remember you and I in Vegas several years ago now, and Evan Mobley was playing in a high profile game that had like the best Nike team against the best Adidas team. And he was on the best Adidas team. And at the time, Mark Fox, who is currently the coach at Cal, he was in between jobs, but he had spent some time, a week or two earlier in the summer, what a lot of coaches who are in between jobs do, like working at camps. And, you know, it gets a way to stay involved in the game. And then B, wink, wink, it's a way to develop relationships with prospects in case you get a head coaching job again. So Mark, I was sitting with him watching this, and he actually pointed to Evan Mobley, and he goes, how much have you seen him? I said, like, more on YouTube than in person, but, like, I'm aware of who that is and the talent level. And he said, future number one pick in the draft. He's a future Kevin Durant. And again, we've discussed that comparison already, but, like, to your point about how well he's been thought of for a long time, like, it's been there for a while. This is the point I was trying to make, more than that one. And I said, oh, so you worked with him? He said, yeah, every day. Him and his brother worked with him for whatever period of time. And he said, dream of a young man. No red flags. Yes, sir. No, sir. Terrific young man. And that's always stuck with me because, you know, sometimes when you're evaluating prospects heading into a draft, like, you hear some things that are troubling. I mean, like, you know, you hear some things that are troubling. I'll just leave it at that. And it often leads to players being picked lower than you would think, or players not being picked at all. By all accounts, whether you talk to Mark Fox or Andy Enfield or basically anybody else, there is none of that with Evan Mobley. He is a terrific prospect who seems to be a high character young man as well. And if you are, you know, looking to invest millions of dollars in a top three pick in a prospect, like, that's the type of person you want to do it with. Somebody who is an incredible basketball prospect, but also a high character young person. And Evan Mobley, for what it's worth, seems to be that. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Royce O'Neal, legend. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys for listening once again to the Ion College Basketball Podcast, the middle of the dumbest pandemic of my lifetime. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts. We'd appreciate it. And we will talk to you again later on this week.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.